I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. CGRU's coverage of the June 2nd provincial election continues. Today, Toronto Centre candidate Ron Shaw discusses his party, the None of the Above Party, and the importance of implementing direct democracy and proportional representation for all residents.
Yeah, okay. My name is Ron Shaw, R-O-N-S-H-A-W, and I'm a candidate for the None of the Above Direct Democracy Party in the electoral district of Toronto Centre. The founder of the party is a guy by the name of Greg Vizina, and he has a background, as I understand it, of being a political consultant. Many years ago, he's told me that he brought a former premier that may be notorious or familiar to many, Mike Harris. So Greg was one of the, if not the key, developer of Mike's political career. Brought him, as he likes to say, brought him from being a golf instructor to being the premier. And so, you know, Greg has a lot of political background, but he's never, run as a candidate himself. And so I guess, like many people, he saw an opportunity to make some changes to the way we're governed in Ontario, and the None of the Above Party is also a federal party. So he is developing a slate of candidates both provincially and federally. So obviously, right now, concerned with the Ontario election, and it's about bringing more accountability to government. I know that's, sort of sounds like a nothing statement, but it is about bringing more power to citizens. And the phrase direct democracy is really key. Now, the name None of the Above, and he tells me that it took quite some time for Elections Ontario to approve that name, I think he even had to go to court to get the name approved.
Why did you feel like it was the right time to run in Toronto Centre, and why did you decide on the None of the Above Direct Democracy Party?
Yeah, well, I guess the short answer is no, none of the four major parties would have anything to do with me. Not that I even tried, but it was, it wasn't a very planned endeavor on my part to become a candidate. It happened just a happenstance. I was speaking with Greg, the leader and of the party, and was asking about the party, was asking about how many candidates he had. I hadn't even been to the website at that point. I was just having a conversation with him. And he said, okay, how about Toronto Centre? You want to take that? I didn't even ask him to be a candidate. And, he just realized that I had some interest. And so I, said, give me a day and I'll let you know. And so I looked into it a little bit more, and, it seemed to make sense. And, I've never been active politically myself, but I thought, many of us complain about government all the time. So, here's a small opportunity to try to make a difference. And so I thought, well, why not? I was also very impressed as I went door to door. I went around a former neighborhood of mine that I used to live in for many years, St. Lawrence neighborhood. And just went door to door in the co-ops there, and I, it was incredible. I probably knocked on, I'm going to say 50 doors, maybe 60 doors, and I had no problem getting 30 signatures You know, people engaged me, asked me about, you know, local issues and stuff. And I thought, well, you know, there's an appetite. I think there's a definite appetite for change. Now, will I come anywhere close to being elected? Of course not. But, you know, it's, it nothing else. It's fun too, I'll tell you.
You've also, this is mentioned on your website, you've been in Toronto, you've lived in Toronto Centre, I believe, over 30 years. Can you tell me more about that history, please?
Sure. Well, you know, in the interest of complete disclosure, I don't live there now, and that's not a requirement, by the way, for being a candidate. I moved to just near Barrie, to Angus, Ontario, 2 years ago. But I will probably move back. You know, I like Toronto. I've lived in Toronto my entire life. I was born in Toronto. And I guess it was, it was in 1979 that I moved to Archer Co-op, and that's in the St. Lawrence community there, into a bachelor apartment. And I had been working for IBM. I had left IBM and ran a photography studio for a couple of years. And then when I left the studio, started my own business, initially doing video production and some photography. And I ran that out of my bachelor apartment in Archer Co-op. And, you know, over the years, grew the business through some, zigging and zagging and acquiring customers and trying to keep quality high and prices reasonable. Started to get some corporate business and grew the business. I leased some more space, actually up the street on George Street, in a condominium, and then some commercial space in that same building. And then after about, I think it was around 2002 that I moved to One King West. So I was there until I left Toronto. So, you know, I've been a downtown guy since 1979, and certainly been a lot of changes in Toronto Centre, even in the last couple of years, as I'm sure you know.
With your party, it's also mentioned that each candidate is independent from what is mentioned by the platforms of legacy parties.
Correct.
So for you, what are the main concerns you've heard from Toronto Centre residents that need change, or the things you see that you believe can be solved?
Yes. Well, you know, I think there's no shortage of things that can and should be changed. You know, when I was going around door to door, they asked me, you know, just one small example, the Novotel Hotel, which ironically is not actually in Toronto Centre. It's on the south side of Esplanade. So it is, it's in Fort York, Spadina. But, you know, a couple people asked me that, you know, they had concerns about, you know, what are you going to do about, was their question. And, you know, I kind of say, what do you think should be done? Because it should be up to, you know, the local residents, much more than a decision. You know, even I realize it was a municipal government decision, but, you know, Ontario kind of rules the municipalities. You know, so what would you do about it? And, you know, all of these are difficult questions, but the short answer is you have to do something about homelessness. You have to do something about mental health, because that's all related. And, The solutions, in my opinion, should be much more related to the people that are affected. Now, there are certain things, highways, for example, that are controversial, that if you live next to where a new highway is going to go, then you're going to likely oppose it. Although some people may say, hey, I want the highway next to me because it's going to make my travel easier. So It really comes down to direct democracy, and let's have a referendum. Let's have a true vote on a lot of these issues, because people think, you know, I believe that many people think that governments will promise one thing, will get elected on the basis of promises. I mean, just so many prolific promises by the mainstream candidates, you know, you know, not that the current premier has done an absolutely terrible job, but so many things that have happened during the pandemic and so on were nothing about what he was elected for. You know, and now all of these promises that are going to come to fruition only if he gets reelected. I mean, it just seems to be such a bald, drop a carrot if you vote for me. And they're all seeming to do that. You know, let's compete with one another to see how much we can give away. And, you know, we don't hear much about, you know, what do people really think?
So before I get into a few of the topics that I have that the scope here, we've been asking every candidate that we could get an interview with in downtown Toronto. I'd like to know more about, okay, so when we talk about direct democracy, the first thing I'd like to know is, hypothetically, if you were to win, how would that work when it comes to voting on certain policies or things you would have to do, I guess, in your writing before that's submitted into Queen's Park?
Right. Well, it would be an evolutionary process, not a revolutionary process. So that means that we would have to deal with the status quo. If the none of the above direct democracy party elected one or more members to the legislature, there would be movement in that sort of evolutionary method. Now, would it be one during one term of the legislature or more? I'm sure it would be multiple before these changes would be implemented. I mean, let's give ourselves a reality check. It would not change overnight. You know, if the none of the above direct democracy party could ever form a government, then, you know, it would probably change a lot faster. You know, if we can elect one or more members, then, you know, in the legislature, in debate, there would be pressure to bring about more citizen participation, whether it's referendums, actual formal referendums on some of the bigger issues, because I realize that, you know, referendums, A, they're expensive, you know, and B, they're inconvenient for people, and C, not everyone participates. It's not perfect. I don't think it will be perfect until we can get to a point where, as I mentioned, blockchain technology enables a very convenient type of highly secure voting and by citizens. It would be an evolutionary thing. You know, let's start with things like changing the system to proportional representation, or moving at least towards proportional representation, realigning the boundaries of the ridings of the electoral district.
Several of the more pressing issues affecting Toronto Centre include affordable housing, economic recovery of the downtown core after COVID-19, and LGBTQ2+ rights.
On affordable housing, on most topics, most issues that that involve, you know, that are big issues, big problems, you know, in my opinion, and again, it's not, you know, it's not what I think that's important. It's what the electorate thinks. But personally, you know, what I stand for on affordable housing is that it clearly is a multifaceted issue, that it's not just about throwing money at the problem. Now, throwing money, who's going to throw the money? The taxpayer is going to throw the money. The public purse is going to have to throw money at it because, you know, private business, private industry, quite frankly, is good at many things. It's not good at making affordable housing. Why would a developer build something that they can make 50 cents on when they can build a an expensive high-rise condominium and make $5 on? So it there's no incentive for private industry, private developers to build affordable housing. But, you know, I will just tell you from my own personal experience that the concept of a co-op, the original concept of a co-op in the 1970s, and as I said, I was one of the first members of the David B. Archer Co-op in the St. Lawrence community, which is in Toronto Center. And the concept of that co-op was you had, it was sponsored by a labor organization, and it was offered to residents who were across the financial spectrum of assisted housing all the way up to market rate and above. So there was even a penalty if by way of a monthly rental charge if your income was excessive. Now, did it make sense to have rich people and poor people in the same development? Well, I say that yes, it did. And that has now changed. Okay. Now there are no, there's very little, if any, as far as I understand, non-subsidized units. So, the market rent people, you know, essentially have been shut out of the co-op concept. And because someone, I'm not sure what special interest group, decided that they would influence the politicians to change the policy so that it would encourage more condominiums that were more suitable, quote unquote, to people who had a reasonable level of wealth, and you know, clearly just so that the developers could make more money, because the developers of those co-ops in the beginning, it was a private builder. The government didn't build it. It was a private builder, but the builder was assured a certain level of profit if they built it. And, if the time is right and developers and builders are a little hungry, they'll take it because it's an assured profit. But it's nowhere near the profit that they would make by building a condominium these days.
He describes how he was disappointed in the initial responses to COVID-19 and how it negatively affected several of the local and independent businesses in the downtown core.
Response to COVID was worse and more damaging than the disease itself. Yes, many people died from COVID. Many, unfortunately, elderly people died from COVID. But the response, I'm amazed that it has not become more of an election issue. But here's my take on it. And again, direct democracy should rule on this. But my opinion is that we hear every day from the mass media and from governments about how important shopping local is, about how important, you know, independent business is. Well, I'm an independent business guy, and I'll tell you, I've been lucky because the industry that I get a little bit of revenue from was not too affected. You know, the internet service provider industry, it was not too affected by COVID. In fact, some could say that there was a bit of a boost to it. But why is it? Why is it that local restaurants that, you know, everyone, you know, the usual suspects in media and government say, oh, you must support local, but the policy seems to fly in the face of it. You know, we saw it during the COVID response about how the provincial government made it possible for Walmart and Costco to fully service their shoppers. Meanwhile, the small retailers who, you know, have a tough time at the best of times, and their differentiator for attracting customers is great service, is knowing the customer, is knowing the product, is giving advice, is, you know, giving personal guidance, giving, you know, fitting their clothes, you know, knowing what they like to eat, you know, not, you know, enforcing a rigorous menu from a chain of restaurants. So all of that was, you know, that was prevented from being applied by these small businesses. And, you know, I know that that there's one, you know, sort of medium-sized business that I know of that was a chain of seven pubs, and they're now down to two. Because, you know, they could not survive. You know, I have a couple of customers that are restaurants, one of which did not survive. So, you know, the rhetoric that, that public policy, you know, is for the little guy, is for the small business. You know, I don't think they're walking the talk. And, you know, as a business guy, I'm a capitalist. I'm not a socialist. Doesn't mean that a socialist outlook is absolutely wrong, but my personal belief is in capitalism, again, being the best of a bunch of bad systems. You know, it's really, you know, I've said this before, it's about people, planet, and profit. It's got to be a balanced approach to, in business. And that's how local business, that's how local business operates. You know, you don't need a buzz phrase of the triple bottom line, people, planet, profit, you know, to understand that's how local business works. You know, you need to have direct contact with your customer, intimate knowledge of your customers and the community, working in the community. So, yeah, I think that revitalizing the business and the community after COVID in Toronto Centre is all about it, like genuinely all about local business, the local restaurants, trying to revitalize that. Now, does it mean handouts by government? Not necessarily, but certainly there should be some accommodation. And I know that the Ontario government had some, you know, relief grants for small business, but they were not fairly applied, in my opinion. And I know of some specific examples where they were unfairly applied.
On LGBTQ2 rights, Rod reaffirmed that no one should be discriminated against.
It's obviously a hot button nowadays. Again, my personal opinion on that subject is, you know, as I've written on my bio, on the NOTA, on the None of the Above Party website, you know, my broad response to that is live and let live. You know, I'm not going to sit here and trumpet how much I support the lifestyle or orientation or beliefs of non-heterosexual people. I absolutely support anyone who wants to live, who wants to realize their own sexuality in their own way. They should not be discriminated against. No one should be discriminated against on the basis of sexual orientation or on the basis of, you know, any other factor You know, unless it's a safety thing, and that wouldn't apply to sexual orientation ever, I don't think. So, you know, specifically on that topic, it's absolutely live and let live. Now, I also don't think that we should be advocating for any particular sexual orientation. Now, I'm getting into possibly a dangerous area here, but I really don't think that I should be pushing a belief in heterosexuality. I don't think someone should be pushing a belief in homosexuality. I think, again, that what you want to do, what you believe you are, who you believe you are, if you want to have a medical change to your sex, then by all means, go ahead and do that. Should that be publicly funded? Well, I think that's one of those questions for a referendum. You know, I think it's such a small amount of money in the overall scheme of things. Who really cares if the public funds that? So, you know, because some people will say, why would I want to support that financially? Well, I don't think it's significant or relevant whether you do or you don't.
For Toronto Centre voters, he says that residents should look beyond the legacy parties and that there are benefits towards giving each party a minority voice, in contrast to electing a majority government again.
Don't be afraid to vote for an alternative choice. Some people say that you're wasting your vote if you don't vote for someone who has a good chance of being elected. I, again, personally believe that a minority government is a good thing, that it holds the government in check through the parliamentary process in the legislature in Ontario. And by holding power to account is a better operation of democracy. And so don't be afraid of, quote unquote, watering down the vote by voting for an alternative person. If you believe in the kinds of things that the candidate believes in and espouses, and in our case, it's more citizen involvement, more accountability for government, more responsibility for their actions, you know, doing concrete things to make democracy more direct, then if you believe in that, or if you believe in another alternative candidate's beliefs, then go for it. Vote your heart. Vote your mind. Don't calculate in your vote as to how you can be strategic to elect or defeat some party. No, vote your heart.
Great. So for listeners right now, where can they find more information about you and your campaign?
Well, as you know, I just launched a website. It's mytorontocenter.com, and it's got a little bit about my ideas and my opinions and what we'd like to do. And if you want to find out more about the None of the Above party, is you can go to the NOTA website, and that's nota.ca. You can see all of the candidates. Unfortunately, we don't have candidates in every riding. We have 28 candidates that are qualified as candidates and are on the ballot. So some ridings in Toronto are represented with our candidates, some are not. But yeah, you can find out a little bit more about NOTA on my website, the mytorontocenter.com. You can fill out a form and engage with me if you you got some ideas, or you just like to complain, or you know, compliments or give me a rah-rah, then I'd love to hear from anybody. You know, again, it's really about engaging citizens. Let's get out the vote. You know, people like you at the university doing this program, it really counts. You know, it's about, let's excite the electorate a little bit. Let's give them some choices. Let's engage the electorate. And, you know, we need to have more than 50% of the qualified voters be the ones who elect our governments. And it seems ridiculous that you don't vote. Vote for whoever you believe in, and vote for what the direction that you want the community to go in, you want the province to go in, you want the country to go in. Don't ignore, you know, this franchise that we all have, this right that we all have. Use it.
That was Ron Shaw, the none of the above party candidate for Toronto Centre. Ontario's provincial election is set for June 2nd this year. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.